Welcome to the CCFR Radio Podcast, your source for news, updates, and stories from the CCFR.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 56 of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Giltaka. Thanks for joining me again. Just rattled all that stuff off super fast. And the reason why I'm talking so fast today is because you may have noticed you're getting an extra podcast. I just did one last Thursday, and here we are Thursday again, and you're getting another one. And the reason for that is that there's just a lot of stuff to update you guys, and I didn't want it to wait for another week. Now, I'm in a race against time because I got a bunch of other stuff that's got has to get done today. I have no choice. So I'm going to skip the commercial break. I'm going to just update you guys on a bunch of housekeeping items. Then we'll take a quick break. I'll come back with Tracy Wilson to talk about a bunch of stuff that needs to be talked about. And then I will close it off immediately. And then I will see you guys in another 2 weeks. If we have another week like we just did, you might even get another podcast in another week again. So anyway, let's get right into it. So a couple of housekeeping items. Number one, we just broke 170,000 confirmed signatures for e-petition E2341. So I did a talk at the Langley Rod and Gun Club last night. Last week, I did a talk at the Mission District Rod and Gun Club. I'll screw up their name. But anyway, these clubs were very gracious in having me down, and I was honored to speak at their clubs. And I really appreciate the board of directors and the members of those clubs taking an interest in keeping their own guns. I know it sounds weird, but it's like most gun owners have no interest in keeping their guns. They are just like, yeah, let the government do whatever they want to me. No problem. But these are clubs that are forward thinking, and they're taking control of their own lives. So really appreciate that support. But anyway, the reason why I brought that up is we just sent out another mass email to all of the clubs in Canada. We think that when we sent out information to all the clubs, out of 1,100 clubs that we sent the information to, we think about 30 shared the information. Even not all firearm organizations shared the information about the petition. So we've worked really, really hard to promote this petition, and I think the results are great, but I wish they were double what they are right now. So all that to say, if you're on the board of directors of a club, you're going to receive an email from the CCFR. Please forward it to your members. We have 2 days left. This is the last push on this petition. If you have people in your household and they agree with the petition, have them sit down. Do it tonight. Get out the laptop, sit your people down, and get them to go through the signing process and get it done. You know, while I was at Langley Rod and Gun Club, people asked me, you know, why wouldn't people sign the petition? I said, you know, one of the only excuses I've heard is people don't want to be on a list. And I mean, I'm like, what? You're already on a list, man. You have a PAL. You're on CPIC, man. Every single day they run your name through CPIC. What do you mean you're already on a list? And believe me, the people in Ottawa aren't sitting there. It's like, oh, you know, Dave Jones from Bathurst, you know, he signed this petition and we don't like that. Like, are you serious? Is this even a serious conversation? So anyway, set all that stuff aside, sign that thing, and don't forget to wait and find that confirmation email and confirm it, because there's 40,000 people yet again sitting on the list that have not confirmed. Actually, the number's growing, for God's sakes, man. Follow through and get that done. So we have 172,000 people, 171 and change, I believe, confirmed, and there's 47,000 people unconfirmed. We could make this petition, I already think it's so big that no other e-petition will catch up to it, but we can get it even bigger and increase that margin. So just get everybody you can to sign this thing. Anyway, next thing, and if you want to find it, it's easy, e2341.ca. The CCFR bought that domain, and it's redirected right to the petition. So couldn't be easier. E2341.ca. Also, make sure that you're on the CCFR mailing list. You know, I've always said about the CCFR being terrible at sending newsletters. Well, we're not terrible at it anymore. We're sending one per week, no matter what. So, and you know, it's amazing because you look at each newsletter and there's tons of stuff that the CCFR is up to in there. So it's a great way to understand exactly what it is that we're doing to try to hold back this Liberal government, at least to the next election. We're doing everything we can. So make sure that you're on the mailing list. If you're not getting our emails, check your spam folder, check your junk mail. It could go in there. It went into mine. I actually had to move it 3 or 4 times to the inbox. So for me to start getting them properly. Yeah, very annoying. But anyway, if you're not signed up for that emailing list or you're not sure, go to firearmrights.ca or ccfr.ca. That'll redirect you there. And scroll down to the bottom of the page and get on our mailing list. Really important. This is the only way that we can rally our community. You don't have to be a CCFR member. You don't have to support us. You don't even have to like us to be on the mailing list. Just get on there. Next thing. Ask your club to support the CCFR. So we sent out emails to all the clubs with a video to try to get people motivated to support the CCFR and get them motivated to be a part of the political process. If your club hasn't sent that out on your club's email newsletter, go talk to your executive and do it right away. Just go, why aren't you supporting this? You know, and they might be like, well, we're not supporting any of the organizations. We don't want to make favorites or play favorite. Like this, every flimsy excuse has to go out the window. I'm telling you guys, we are going to lose everything unless the Liberals see a great big united community that says, no, you're doing the wrong thing and we're not going to tolerate it. That's the only thing that they understand, is the idea that they'll get thrown out of office and they'll have to go to work like everybody else. That's the only thing that scares these people. You have to understand how a lot of these people are incentivized, right? And the first term ones, they're really scared, right? Because they're not going to get that cushy pension. So I'm telling you, this is the only way to do it. We got to stand together as a community. And that means all firearm orgs. That means all gun clubs. That means all executives at gun clubs. That means all gun club members. That means everybody that has a PAL. You know, for some reason, I feel like we're gaining momentum because the CCFR is growing and the amount of people and the petition is working and all the rest of that stuff. But we just have so much more work to do. And it takes individuals that don't really step up and do much to tell their club, hey man, share that stinking newsletter. Quit it. You know, quit the politics. It's not about politics for us. It's about survival. So anyway, I know I'm a little animated today, but I've had a pretty crazy couple of days. And the last thing, I just wanted to mention this. I have mentioned this before, but it's really important to me. People send me a lot of messages because I'll go and speak at clubs and stuff and people are like, oh, I sent you an email, or oh, I sent you a message on Facebook. You never responded. It's like, dude, I get 20 of these messages a day. It's actually come down from like 60 for a while in the early days of the CCFR, but I get like 20 messages a day on Facebook. I get emails, people sending me emails. I got people sending me messages on Twitter. I've become that guy that doesn't respond because I'm just a normal human being and I just can't even look at them all because I have work that has to get done so that we can fulfill our promise to people that support the CCFR. I have to fulfill, you know, my promise to students that I still do the firearm safety course. I have to still do the other work that I do. I have other businesses I have to look after as well. I have to produce a television show. And somehow I have to be a father and a husband at some point. And then, God forbid, I may want to pull the trigger on a firearm at least once every 6 or 8 months, which is where I'm at these days, right? So this is the reason why I don't stay up from 11 o'clock at night to 2 in the morning answering people's messages. And I'll tell you, the kind of stuff that people send me, I was just telling a guy last night at the Langley Rod and Gun Club, I'm like, people will send me messages like, oh, hey, Rod, I know you're busy, but can I transport ammunition together with a firearm on the way to the range? I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? You've got to be kidding me. So, and I'm not saying that these people are bad people. They're just, it's thoughtless, right? They're like, oh yeah, you know, Rod will, you know, drop everything and answer my, you know, transportation of firearms question when I can just go to the Canadian Firearms Center website and it's actually right there, right on the website. So, you know, a lot of these messages are stuff that people can just Google, right? So anyway, I'm not saying don't send me a message. I'm just saying if I don't respond to you, it's not that don't think that you're important or whatever. It's just I physically, as a single human being, I can't get to them all. So I don't want people to be offended. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to come back with an important conversation with Tracy Wilson right after this.
Once you lose rights, it's nearly impossible to get them back. Right now, there are politicians and bureaucrats working day and night to eliminate your ability to own and use firearms in Canada. They're talking about not allowing you to keep your firearms at home and even taking away the ones you already have. It's not a joke. It's not an exaggeration. Activism is a lot of work, and most people don't have the time. But something that you can do is support the CCFR. for $40 a year, you can be a part of the hardest working firearm organization in Canada and get $5 million worth of insurance. The CCFR lobbies government and works to improve the public image of gun owners through media and educational campaigns. Protect your own ability to own and use firearms before it's too late. Go to firearmrights.ca and click Why Join. That's firearmrights.ca.
All right, via Skype, I would like to welcome once again Tracy Wilson. How's it going, Tracy?
It's going great today, Rod. How are you?
I think I'm doing all right.
Good.
Actually.
Good.
So
we've busy.
Yeah, it's ridiculously busy. So we've got a couple of things to talk about. That's not my list. Jeez, wheeze. We actually have three things to talk about, so we might as well get started and get the show on the road. So the first thing we want to talk about is the CCFR's policy talk event that you attended a couple of days ago.
Yeah, so this turned out to be a really valuable event. I mean, it's not the first time, by all means, that we've engaged with stakeholders in the community within Toronto that are dealing with the violence that they're seeing in their streets from gangs and, you know, just general crime and violence. But I got to say, this was a really well-rounded conversation. We started off with a fantastic panel moderated by Brian Lilly. So we had Jordana Goldlist. She's a criminal defense lawyer from Toronto. She, you know, represents these types of people. We had Marcel Wilson from the One by One movement. Marcel is a great community advocate, literally turned his life completely around and is now helping other youth in Toronto escape the violence. We had Evelyn Fox, who is a survivor of violence. She lost a 26-year-old son back in 2016 to a shooting outside a nightclub, and that murder remains unsolved to this day. So she's done some grassroots work within the community and started a group called Communities for Zero Violence. Then we also had Allison DeGroote from the CSAAA. She's got some great perspectives. She's also a gun owner, as well as she represents the firearms industry within Canada. And when you're going to start talking about handgun bans, you know, it's a two-level conversation. Will they work? And if not, what will? But also, what will be the impacts of that kind of legislation? So she had lots to say. And then we had Emily Sanford Brown. She's been in the shooting community for over 45 years and survived every level of legislation, registration, licensing. You know, she's very well versed in what we've all been through and what the current regulations are. So we had this great panel. Brian Lilly moderated. He did a fantastic job of making sure the conversation stayed on topic, to really talk about solutions, to talk about, you know, why this has become such a politicized thing rather than, you know, a solution-oriented conversation. So it was fantastic. They did a panel conversation. And then, of course, we did Q&A. We decided to do it sort of Ben Shapiro style. So basically, if you disagree with what the panel is saying, or you do think a handgun ban or any kind of gun ban would help with the street violence in Toronto, then you get to come up and speak first. And there was some interesting stuff. The video will be out. But we had Ken Price from the Danforth Families for Safer Communities. He came up to the mic, and I gotta say, like, it's pretty brave, right? He's coming into a conversation that involves a lot of gun owners, but also stakeholders from the community. He had some things to say. We may not agree on everything, but we both agreed that we need to start having civil discourse. And you'll notice Allison DeGroote from the CSAAA, she made a tweet. She retweeted my tweet from the event and said this was by far the first time that she's seen a real civil discussion by people who know what they're talking about, who have a vested interest in seeing a safer community, and who are working together towards that. So, you know, as much as I was disappointed not to have a lot of, political VIPs, we didn't really have any politicians answer the call to attend, and no mainstream media covered it. I almost feel like the way to have that honest, real conversation is actually to exclude them, because you bring them into it, and of course, it turns into political theater. So, Yeah, I think we just got to keep these lines of communication open, and we're going to keep trying. And, you know, I think as gun owners, you know, we can take a role in helping find real solutions that'll make a difference. So.
Yeah, you got to leave it to the gun lobby to actually dig down and try to find out how to really solve these problems. And all the people that are paid to come up with these solutions and to do this stuff, they're asleep at the wheel, playing politics with people's lives. And that's one of the biggest frustrations about being a firearm owner. And you know, the other thing I want to say too is good on Ken Price for showing up to this thing. He has just trumped everybody. He's trumped the doctors. He's trumped, you know, Wendy Sukier and Heidi and all these, this horrible cast of characters. He's trumped them all by saying, yeah, you know what? I'm not afraid of you guys. I'm going to come and have a conversation. And I've seen Ken Price on TV a couple of times. I was on the National kind of opposite him. Of course, I'm the gun owner, so I get two sentences and they get, you know, eight paragraphs. But, you know, that is what it is to be a gun owner. You're automatically horrible. Mm-hmm. But I disagree with the way that he views almost everything. But I would be absolutely happy to sit down, have a coffee with him and talk about these issues and see both sides of it. And so really, I'm really impressed with him that he wasn't afraid to come out and have a conversation. I'm told it got pretty spirited. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, you just those are the kinds of people that actually deserve respect. So
100%. And I know after the event was over, I specifically went over to him and we shook hands and, you know, we had a little conversation. I said, look, we may not agree on the solutions that are required. We don't agree on how to get there, but we all agree that we need a safer community. And the fact that instead of, you know, scratching each other's eyes out on Twitter, here we are face to face talking about that. And that is such a huge leap. It was absolutely amazing. I know his wife was taking some pictures of us talking, and you know, I'm hoping that they're used for good. But you know, I do think that we are intentionally divided by the government and the media into that pro and anti side, and that is what causes us to be in the situation that we are eternally in, where we are, you know, you're either pro gun or anti gun, and that's the extent of the conversation. It's not meaningful. So I think when we can get rid of all those people, come together at the table and start having discussions that are calm and rational and meaningful, and we listen to his point of view and then he listens to our point of view, we all learn something and we're better for it. So we're going to keep it up.
Yeah. And the liberal government fails miserably. You know, you got Bill Blair and you got Justin Trudeau doing these big press conferences where they trot in all the doctors and all this BS, and it is entirely one-sided. Justin Trudeau will not meet with us. He will not meet with any of the other organizations. He won't meet with just nothing. He'll meet with Joshua Boyle and Omar Khadr and, you know, and then of course the anti-gun people. He's, you know, talk about just the worst government ever. Just dividing Canadians all the time. And so anyway, I really think that Ken Price needs to be commended and just needs to be acknowledged as being a real person with some integrity. So a lot of respect there. Next thing I want to talk about real quick is I did the CTV interview.
Yeah, it was amazing. I saw it this morning.
Man, I got lucky there because I've been in a brain fog because I'm overtasked. And I was like, oh man, I had one of those emergencies, you know, the little packets and an extra cup of coffee. And I had to drive 100 kilometers to downtown Vancouver to be on that on Alberta Prime Time, it's called. You can find that video. I'm going to grab it and then upload it to the CCFR channel so it's accessible. And we'll also send it out in the newsletter tomorrow. So every Friday there's a CCFR newsletter. I said this in the opening segment. But don't forget, make sure you get on our mailing list. So go to firearmrights.ca or ccfr.ca. That'll take you there too. And go scroll down to the bottom of the page and sign up for our newsletter. We send one newsletter every week. We do not spam you. So anyway, I'll have that video up so you can check it out. But it was really interesting because they had, you know, crazy Dr. Drummond on after me. And so I got lucky. I was kind of fairly lucid. Made my points the best I could. They bring in Dr. Drummond, and he could not help He's so full of hate, this guy, that he could not help but mention me twice. Wow, your previous speaker, rah, rah, rah. And then he rambled on in hyperbole and this inflammatory language and losing his place. And apparently he's like one of the spokespeople for the Canadian Emergency Physicians Association or whatever it is. And I'm like, man, did you interview for that position?
Makes you wonder, you know, is this an appointment or did someone draw the short stick or what happened? Because, yeah. I mean, it is really important to make sure your forward-facing people can, you know, speak coherently on the topic that they're tasked with speaking on. So, yeah.
Yeah, he was a disaster. And of course, you know, first they tried to come out with, you know, a position, well, with an argument that supports their position. It was like, well, criminal use of firearms. Like, yeah, it didn't work because there's no evidence that licensed gun owners represent a disproportionate risk to public safety. You guys heard me say that 1,000 times. Then they moved on to straw purchasing. Straw purchasing is a total dead end because it almost never happens. And then they're like, oh man. And then like crime guns from domestic sources, and that gets blown to smithereens. And even all the people that were pushing it, like John Tory, speaking of political hacks, and then you got Mark Saunders and then some other chiefs and stuff. They've pulled that back and they're like, oh, geez, we really got caught on that one. So they've stopped that. And now they put all their cards on suicide. You know, we need gun bans because of suicide. And so Drummond, this is his big thing. He perceives himself to be the expert. This guy wouldn't stand a chance in a room with me. And I'm not trying to build myself up and, you know, I'm not a doctor, and he is. He wouldn't stand a chance. He would be completely destroyed. So, you know, hinging all his bets on suicide. So the way that they do that is they oversimplify suicide. It's like, well, there's, I don't know, anywhere from 500 to 800 people a year killing themselves with guns. So obviously no one can own a gun. He does such a disservice to doctors and a disservice to anybody that cares about suicide by oversimplifying it.
Well, I think one part of this conversation that's always left out, too, is when you've got, you know, here you've got Dr. Drummond and the spin doctors lobbying for more power. And he literally uses those words. They want more power in order to make sure they can have people's guns taken away if they deem them to be an immediate danger to themselves or others. Right. I think we can all agree we don't want people to get hurt with guns. But the problem here is by stigmatizing it that way, I don't even know what more power he's looking for. They're not clear on that. Do they want access to the RCMP database of gun owners? Do they want more access to your private life? And how on earth does this encourage somebody who may be struggling with a mental issue? How does it encourage them to go forward to their doctor when he's literally advocating for, you know, I want to dig into your life and make sure I control every aspect of it? I feel like it might create a barrier between gun owners and, you know, the mental health work that they may need to ensure that they are in a healthy state of mind. So I don't know. It's a very difficult conversation. And for them to simplify it down like that, I mean, you know, removing a lethal means from someone, come on, what do? We're going to take away their car, remove the bleach from their home, like, you know, get rid of all the rope. Like, why would on earth would we not focus on better and easier access to mental health help for Canadians? Like, I don't know. Yeah. It just, yeah, it's confusing.
Yeah. And the thing is, and actually to go back to something that you said was the problem is not an immediate danger to themselves or others, right? Because if someone's in an immediate danger, this is what I said in the interview, which is like they have the power to actually detain you. They have almost policing powers. They can detain you and they can sedate you. They can drug you and have you and keep you as long as it takes to get a psychiatrist there to evaluate you, to have you be released. And they can put you in restraints. And how do I know this? Because they did that to my dad. Mm-hmm. So, and like, and I'm talking, you know, not even a year ago, right? Because they had fed him all these sleeping pills. He said, don't give me sleeping pills. Like, he's 80 years old, right? He's like, don't give me sleeping pills because I'd react badly. They're like, yeah, whatever, you don't know anything. And they gave him all these sleeping pills and kept him in the emergency ward because he had a mild heart attack. They kept him in the emergency ward for 5 days because there was no beds at the big hospital where they can do angiograms. 5 days. It was actually over Christmas. I had to bring Christmas dinner to him in the emergency room. So he's just behind a curtain for 5 days straight. Couldn't sleep. People are coming in from car accidents, everything. They have no place to put him. Don't even get me started on the medical system because it drives me crazy, right? It's like, oh, world class. Yeah, for sure. So anyway, so they, you know, and he went crazy, wanted to leave. And because he was sick and tired of being stuck in this emergency ward and he was hallucinating because of the sleeping pills, plus he couldn't sleep. And then they actually physically restrained him, drugged him, put him in restraints, and then called me to come down and try to sort that out. So I had to sit there from whatever, 2 a.m. till about 9:30 the next day till the psychologist came in, all stuff. Doctors, well, I know it's a long story, right? But doctors already have a tremendous amount of power. And now Drummond, as an individual and a spokesperson for his group, says, we need more power. We need power to, even if you're not an immediate threat and there's no other jurisdiction available to us, we still want to be able to have your gun seized and get the police into your home and maybe detain you and ask you questions that you're compelled to answer. God knows what their plans are. But, you know, it seems like the answer to every problem for these people is the government and bureaucrats need more power. If you've got a problem, here's your answer. We need more power. And it's like,
It's terrifying.
Anyway, I don't know. I can speculate all day of what their motivations are. But anyway, one last thing, because this is interesting. I don't know if I said this in the last podcast, so please forgive me if I did. But there was this story and I did capture. I'm starting to think that I did. But anyway, just get through it, guys. I captured some video. I was watching the news. My fault for doing that. But anyway, I was watching the news and there's a story about the woman who runs Canada's national suicide hotline. And she's trying to get a new system implemented called a 988 system. So basically what that is that you have 911 for emergency, you know, of varying degrees, right? A wide spectrum of different emergencies, fire, police, ambulance, all that stuff. But there's also the ability, if you're in emotional distress, to press 988 and you'll be connected immediately to the National Suicide Hotline. Well, this was a story of this woman. She was like, I'm trying to get this implemented. It's not expensive. It's not difficult. This is a walk in the park to do. Costs almost no money. And basically she says, I've talked to senators. I've talked to MPs. I can't get anywhere. And I'm like, what would it cost to implement 988? Well, the telecoms would probably do it for free. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's say it costs $1 million to do it. And let's say it costs, I don't know, an extra $4 million to add, you know, 15 more people to the National Suicide Hotline, 15 more operators sitting there waiting. What is it, like $4 or $5 million a year to, like, you know, triple the suicide support system in Canada and to make it easier to access it. And that would help God knows how many people, prevent them from even thinking about suicide, or at least get those thoughts out of their head and provide some support for them. Would they go there for $4 million a year or $1 million a year, let's say? Would they go there first and get that done and see if that helps? Or would they go spend $1 billion confiscating firearms from licensed gun owners? Or would they go and give power to doctors to dig even more into your life and discourage you from getting help in the first place? I don't know.
It's crazy. It's, you know, crazy.
These people are nuts, honest to God.
Yeah. Well, and considering firearms only make up 16% of all suicides, you know, a plan like what you're discussing here could help all
everybody
people.
Wins.
Yeah. Like, you know, what about people who hang themselves or take pills or any of the other various methods that are far more.
Well, they don't matter, Tracy. Popular, right? They don't matter.
That's because they're, like, not political, right?
Just like all the people that could defend themselves from rape, murder, and assault with a firearm, and they die because they don't have access to that, and the government actually holds them down and makes them victims, lets violent people take advantage of them and destroy them. You know, those people, the lives of those people do not matter to these people. They don't even exist. They're only concerned with the lives of people that support their narrative. And that's a strong statement, but I challenge anybody in this country or any other country to disprove what I just said.
Yep. I agree 100%.
So anyway, I'm getting a little animated. We got to switch it out to something else. So, hey, man, these people get to me.
They're just a little passionate to stuff like that.
You know, they're hurting a lot of people and making no sense and wrecking everything for people. They can't even sit across the table and face you. Even if the CCFR does something like offers $15,000 to charity for them to just sit down for 90 minutes and talk about it. Cowards. Anyway, yeah. You went to the CSAAA industry show.
Yeah, so this was a great event. Now, it's always been important to the CCFR to work in conjunction with our advocacy partners across the country, and the CSAAA is no different. So they're the industry advocates. We represent the consumers, like the end users, gun owners. They represent retailers, manufacturers, and importers across the country. So this was a great show. It was not open to the public, so it's the first time I've ever been to it. We are the CCFR themselves. Are a member of the CSAAA. So I took the opportunity to go. This was really well done. It's a place for retailers to sort of get together with distributors, talk about upcoming products, you know, make purchases, make deals, sort of see what's new on the market. And for us, I mean, we don't sell guns, but I was happy to be there and network with all these people. They do a great big industry dinner on the first night. Which is great. So everybody gets together for a buffet meal. We hear about all the wonderful things the CSAAA has done over the year and what they've got coming up. So that was wonderful. Allison is an amazing speaker. The CCFR got 3 shout outs. So that was really nice to hear. And I'll be joining them. Actually, they have a Western show, which is about 3 times as big. They've got it coming up in a couple of weeks out in Alberta. So I'll be heading to that one as well to support the CSAAA. We are all in this together, and it's never been more important to stay united.
Yeah. Allison's great, and they are they're a good organization.
There was one little tidbit. I'm not going to go too into it because it's sort of a pilot project at this point. But there was one thing I sat in on, and they had RCMP and West there. They had a constable there from the RCMP program, and they're working on a pilot project to work in conjunction with firearms retailers to identify and possibly prevent straw purchasing. As small of a problem as it is, you know, like Allison said, it's in their lane, right? So if they can better equip their retailers with some tools to even just possibly recognize the signs of straw purchasing, then maybe that's something that we can cut down as well. So once again, you've got the firearm community, you know, actively working on programs and in conjunction with law enforcement to make sure that we do keep Canadians safe. So
yeah, what a bunch of horrible people gun owners are.
Yeah,
you know, the spin docs are right. We're all law abiding until we're not, apparently. And now you did mention something in your lane. Are you funded by the NRA?
No. If I was funded by the NRA, we wouldn't even be having a fight right now. This would be over and the doctors would be doctoring, doing what they're supposed to be doing, working in emergency rooms. And we'd be at the range enjoying ourselves. So, no.
That was a good response. That was good.
Thank
I just
you.
Threw that at you.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. I think we've been talking for about 20 minutes, and I appreciate the update. And we will see you next time.
Sounds great. Talk to you soon.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. I really appreciate all the people listening to this. I mean, we're getting somewhere around 3,000 listeners on YouTube alone. People typically don't listen to podcasts on YouTube. So I think our listenership has grown to around, I can only estimate because I can't track people on podcast apps like, you know, Spotify and iTunes. I know it's changed from iTunes. I'm not an Apple guy, so I don't know what they call it now. The iTunes Store or Apple Store or whatever. But I think we're probably getting around 5,000 to 8,000 people listening to this podcast every 2 weeks now. And I'm just, and again, just an estimate. And I'm just really grateful for all of you guys being out there and paying attention to what we're doing and supporting us and just getting involved in your you know, in holding on to your own guns. So thank you for that. If you're not a member of the CCFR, I'd love it if you considered becoming a member. You can do that at firearmrights.ca or ccfr.ca. That'll lead you there too. One last reminder, get on our mailing list. You can do that at the same website. And for God's sakes, you have 2 days left to add your name to e-petition E2341. You can go to e2341.ca and it's a direct link to the petition. Go there and stink and sign it, man. It's like 3 minutes of effort to do something really important for your, you know, just for yourself, for even forget about all of your friends and your community. Do it for yourself and get the people in your house if they believe in the democratic process, because it's really not a firearm petition. It's a democratic process petition. Get them to sign it as well. You know, send it to people at your church. Send it to people at your gun club. You have 2 days left. So take action right now and see if we can't get this over 200,000 signatures. That would be fantastic. And again, the last thing I'm going to say is I will remind you yet one more time and for the last time, because I'm not mentioning this anymore. Go to your gun club. Get them to share our newsletter, get them to forward our newsletter, or at least provide a link to our newsletter, a link to our member-only video. I sent that out to every gun club in Canada, probably 30 or 20 actually shared it. Ask your firearm retailer if they support the CCFR, if they're forwarding information, if they're sending information out about the petition, stuff like that. We need to if our community won't come together just on its own, we need to pull it together. So anyway, if you do all that stuff, that would be great. If you could play a part in that, that would be fantastic. And you will reap the benefits as an individual gun owner for it. Again, thank you everybody for listening, and we will see you next time.
This is another episode of the CCFR Radio Podcast. Remember, if you don't stand up for your own ability to own and use firearms, who will? Join the CCFR or donate right now at www.firearmrights.ca.